Blog Talk Radio.
Now, PW Torch and Spreaker bring you the Wade Keller Pro Wrestling Post Show. It's time to talk this week's WWE Friday Night SmackDown on Fox.
Well, the crowd was electric for John Cena, Brandon. I wouldn't say Cena did a lot. He didn't have to do a lot, and it probably was wise for him not to do a lot. But we had a main event that told a story without any major angles, but the crowd seemed to eat up just about everything that happened for that, like, 12 minutes, not counting ring entrances. A lot of hype. Did it live up to the hype enough for you? Did it exceed it? What do you think, Brandon?
I think it hit my relatively lofty bar, but I say that with some hesitation only because I wish that they would have had a little bit more time to do what they set out to do. And I understand that they didn't want Cena to do a whole lot, and they got more or less what they intended to out of the 12 or so minutes that they had. But with the Bloodline entrance being as long as it is, and with Cena having to soak in the reaction, and I definitely think it was worth it to soak that in and to let the crowd kind of, you know, cheer him to the ring because it was a cool moment. It did leave very little time for the match, and with two commercial breaks, one just before the match began and then one just a few minutes into the actual match itself, it just felt like there wasn't a lot of meat there on the bone. And so I think they did a good job with the time that they had, but I would have liked to have gotten just a few more minutes of ring time, just given how much they put into this.
That's the thing. They just didn't leave them much time, and it's not like KO and Sammy couldn't deliver more. So, you know, I have mixed feelings about it. You know, I mean, Sammy took the fall, and Cole asked the right questions afterwards. You know, how will the Bloodline react? What's next for Cena? But given how much they hyped this match for the last couple of weeks and all the advertising during NFL games and, as Cole mentioned, like a Fox News interview and the anticipation for it, it seemed like we should have gotten more from the big stars in this match. Just even 5 more minutes, maybe 8 more minutes would have made the match feel more epic. And in the end, I mean, I cannot deny that the crowd is eating it up and they got the reaction that they wanted, but I wonder how many people at this moment filing out are going, that was it, that was fun, but now that the rush of the moment is gone, it kind of came and went quickly. And I get Cena not wanting to do a lot, and Reigns is sort of at this point where, you know, he does what he has to, and if it calls for a lot, he'll do it. But if it doesn't, you know, he happily won't. But, man, Sammy and KO are workhorses, and I think they could have told more of a story if they gave them 5, 8, 10, 12 more minutes and made it feel a little bit more epic. So that's my, you know, critique and reaction. I think it worked. You know, it's just that asterisk of, with all that hype, did they need to deliver something more? I mean, Michael Cole 2 or 3 times said, is this going to be the match of the year? This could be the match of the year. And that means things. That term has meaning. And, you know, you can talk about, you know, stuff that Gunther and Sheamus have done and throw around match of the year for this or that. If you throw that term around, I think you got to deliver more than you did there. I think they might be victims of overhype. Yeah, go ahead.
I think with Cole saying that, WWE sometimes gets themselves in a bit of trouble with throwing around terms like match of the year, because on paper, I think that they can get away with saying that with a straight face because of what they put behind it coming in. And what it meant in terms of Roman Reigns does not typically wrestle on TV, and John Cena has not wrestled on WWE TV all year, or pay-per-view for that matter. So I don't think that there was a serious expectation that this would be in-ring match of the year or even a candidate for match of the year, but within the confines of WWE storytelling, I think that they're able to get away with saying that with a straight face because of the star power involved from a spectacle perspective. Now, I do think because of the short length, it failed to live up to that, but I don't think it crossed into like farcical that Michael Cole would talk about it that way before the match began. I wonder if the people in the audience got a little bit more out of it or felt a little bit more fulfilled given that they got those extra few minutes that we did not. I mean, there was about a 3-minute, 30-second TV break in the middle there. And I assume that was largely KO and Sammy working because when they went to break, Roman Reigns was the legal man against KO. And then when they came back, Sammy was legal. So I assume that Sammy probably got the tag and they worked for the live audience for those few minutes. Now, who knows? Maybe they just did rest holds as they often do in these live settings, but maybe they worked a little harder during that 3 minutes and fulfilled the crowd a little bit more. But yeah, I definitely would have liked to have seen more, especially given that, you know, this was a loaded show in a lot of ways, and they did a lot, and they brought a lot, and they set the stage for a lot of stuff that's to come. But they also had a lot of promo on this show that they could have theoretically cut back on just to give them a few more minutes.
Is there anything that they did or didn't do that surprised you, not just in the match, but the lead up to the match? Because we had interaction with Sammy and Heyman, again, the mind effing of Sammy with Heyman cutting him off before going in to talk to Roman, planting in Sammy's mind that Roman might be upset with a crowd chanting his name, saying it's a bad optic. And then Heyman going, enough with the stall tax, and acting like it was all just in fun and games. And Sammy like, yeah, that was just fun. Good for you, Paul, messing with my head, quote, just for fun. But he really messed with his head, and then Sammy brings it up, and then Reigns pauses and looks upset or concerned or consternated, and then all of a sudden he's like, of course I don't mind it. All the messing with Sammy's mind is seemingly going to be what eventually causes Sammy to crack, because they string him along and they mess with him, and KO's going to get through to him. So to me, that was more interesting than the match itself, is acknowledging the cheers for Sammy and introducing that. And then you have Sammy taking the fall, and I'm thinking of other things in the match that might, you know, be talking points for Heyman or Roman or the Usos when it comes to Sammy, keeping Sammy on edge and uncomfortable with his place. Your thoughts on the lead up to the match and the match?
Yeah, so in the match itself, KO got the upper hand on Sammy in the early going, and they really, really sold the fact that Sammy may be letting Roman down. And the camera kept cutting to Roman and showing that he was disgruntled and disappointed, and eventually he reached his hand out to tag himself into the match as though he wanted to, you know, show Sammy that he could take care of business against Owens. So I thought that they built that story and continued that story nicely once it got to the action itself. I liked everything that they did earlier on in the night. I thought that, as usual, the Bloodline's best work often happens outside of the ring, and it's the little things. It's the nuance in the promos, the exasperation in the words that are said, the looks on Roman's face, the way that Sammy always appears just slightly on edge, even though he wants to believe he's, you know, fully in and fully immersed within the Bloodline. I think that it was a continuation of just doing a really, really good job of telling this story about Sami Zayn wanting so desperately to be accepted into this group. And this group has welcomed him with open arms to an extent at this point, but there's still that question as to whether or not they are in fact being truthful about their intent to make him a not just an honorary Oos, but an actual Oos, or if they are stringing him along for an eventual backstabbing. And I think that they tell that story well, and they continue to tell it well tonight. In terms of surprises, I think that while coming into tonight, I certainly saw the very distinct possibility that Sami Zayn could take the pinfall and KO could get the win, which is eventually what they ended up doing. I think any time Roman Reigns is involved in a loss at this point, because it happens so rarely, even if you are expecting it, it does kind of shock you a bit. It does kind of stop you in your tracks to go, hey, wait a minute, you know, this hasn't happened, not just recently in recent months, but in recent years. And it just speaks a lot to the booking of Roman Reigns. So yeah, I mean, even though he doesn't take the pinfall, he does technically lose the match. Sammy takes the pin. And I think that probably starts the unraveling, which is the next step to this story.
Yeah. And, you know, I think this is something they could play out longer than starting to having it unravel now. But I don't think there's a wrong way to do this. I mean, I think they're going to be in good shape if they unravel things enough to lead to basically Sammy completely being opposite of the bloodline come WrestleMania. But I think they could also stretch it out to SummerSlam. And some of it just depends on not what's best for the Sammy bloodline storyline, but what they have afterwards that they want to get to for Roman. And so sometimes that might cause you, oh, we could wait till SummerSlam, but if we did, we wouldn't be able to get this in with Cody or this in with Seth or this in with whomever. So there's a lot of things that play, and that's why I say there's not a right or wrong way. I will say in a vacuum, I would, setting aside all other options that might influence our decision, I'm for Sammy having a fun, you know, a longer run in the bloodline, and I don't think it would belabor a point or get repetitive. I think the dynamic with them has so many options. But, you know, WrestleMania is still months and months away, so there's plenty of time to tell a fun story and get more out of this. And then, of course, you know, and this is just getting way ahead of things, I'm curious what post-bloodline Sami Zayn is like in WWE. You know, what when Sammy is not wrestling Kevin Owens or a current member of the bloodline, what is he doing? And are they already thinking about that? And if there's a post-WrestleMania draft, does he get separated from them and suddenly is he a top guy on whatever brand the bloodline, quote, isn't on, assuming they still do that or not? But like I said, that's getting ahead of ourselves. But maybe they have something in mind where they're like, you know what, let's not wait too long. We're excited about what's next for Sammy post-bloodline. Let's milk this for all we can in the next 4 months or so, and then move on.
Yeah, I think that there's certainly a lot of different ways that they can go with it. I know that Elimination Chamber is in Montreal. They've made a big deal about that. And
talking about Sammy getting cheered tonight could also be planting seeds for that moment in Montreal.
Right. I mean, Sammy, at this point, Sami Zayn versus Roman Reigns in Montreal at Elimination Chamber seems like a huge match that they can build that show around. The chamber matches themselves obviously can focus around the lower card titles or however, you know, they'll have a women's one and perhaps at this point either a U.S. or Intercontinental one, given the repositioning of those titles. So they can certainly get a stacked card by putting Roman and Sammy at the top. And man, if Sammy is continuing on the trajectory that he is now, they're going to have a incredible crowd situation on their hands. And I wonder if, you know, as fun as it has been to see Sami Zayn in the bloodline, I wonder if you really can forego doing that match just because the atmosphere would be so incredible.
I think they've given fans, I wouldn't say permission because they didn't need permission, but more reason to chant Sammy because now it's going to get under the skin of Roman Reigns. And he conveyed that with his pause and the consternation over the question and replaying the Sammy cheers and Heyman framing it as a bad optic. And now fans are going to be like, oh, bad optic? We'll show you bad optic. Mm. So they really have unlocked any resistance to fans cheering Sammy by acknowledging it and incorporating it into the storyline. And frankly, fans have been booing Sammy and were disappointed in him and thought, you know, we're going to boo you because we like KO and we like Cena and you're associating with people we don't like. If that was the way the crowd went, they would tell the story differently. But they're incorporating the crowd reactions, and I think it's the predictable, logical crowd reaction. I'm not surprised by it, but it wasn't a given. You know, it's possible they would have been they would have tried and been effective at getting the crowd to turn against Sammy, but the crowd just, you know, likes Sammy, and not in a traditional babyface way, although that's part of it, but also just he's so damn entertaining and what's the word for him? Wanting to belong and being eager to belong and just being such a good performer, sort of in a meta way, playing off of the Bloodline. So they've embraced that. Well, a lot more happened on this show, including Ronda Rousey going 17 minutes to retain her title against Raquel Rodriguez, followed by Charlotte Flair making her long-awaited return. Oh, and by the way, Charlotte challenged Rousey to a match on the spot. Rousey accepted, and Charlotte won the title in about 40 seconds. So we have a new SmackDown Women's Champion, and that is not even the A topic on today's show, although it could have been, but, the heavily hyped match of the year, as Cole said, rightfully led the show off. So we got a lot more to get to, including some matches announced for next week's show, too. So let's pause and introduce ourselves in the show, and then we'll get on to those other topics and calls and emails. And Javier Machado will be joining us, too, for our roundtable segment in a bit. This is the Wade Keller Pro Wrestling Post Show for Friday, December 30th, 2022. And I'm Wade Keller, the host of the program, the founder of Pro Wrestling Torch, started as a newsletter in the late 1980s, still going strong after 1,800 plus issues, and also our website, pwtorch.com. And I'm the host of a variety of podcasts, including the Wade Keller podcast and post shows. Although yesterday, Zach Haydorn guest hosted on the flagship with Tyler Sage. It was a simulcast of their Fireside Chat 2022 Year in Review and a look ahead to 2023. I hope you'll check that out. Also added a bonus segment at the end, the previously VIP exclusive four-part Wade Keller Hotline from 2 years ago, reviewing the year 2020, the pandemic year, where I marched through all 50-plus issues of the Pro Wrestling Torch newsletter, all the headline stories, one after another chronologically, recapping that year, the how we covered the pandemic in terms of our headlines and what the rhythm was to adjusting to that situation and everything else that happened in that year with the upstart AEW. I recommend everybody check that out to hear Zach and Tyler talk about 2022 and a look at the 2023 and then that look back at our coverage of the pandemic year, previously VIP exclusive. That's on our Blue Logo show. Search Wade Keller on your podcast app and hit refresh if you are already subscribing and check out that show. But tonight we are here to talk SmackDown, and the other voice you've heard so far is Brandon LeClaire, a PWTorch.com contributor. Brandon, welcome to the final post show of 2022.
Thanks for having me. Very glad to be here. Certainly an eventful show to cover and to talk about here to close out the year.
Yeah. Yes. Well, good to have you. I want to encourage people who are listening live to give us a call if you haven't yet and push 1 on your keypad to indicate that you want to be on the show and contribute. The number is 347-215-8558. That's 347-215-8558. When you call push 1, that flags you, and then we'll bring you out of the show for participation in our discussion. You can also email us, as always, at wadekellerpodcast@pwtorch.com. wadekellerpodcast@pwtorch.com. You do not need to listen to the show or post show live to participate that way. You can send your emails in during the show or right during Raw, Dynamite, or SmackDown or right afterwards. Also, if you're willing to be an on-site correspondent, if you're attending an upcoming Raw, Dynamite, or SmackDown, email me at wadekellerpodcast@pwtorch.com. Put the name of the city and the date in the subject line, and I will be in touch, and we'll set you up being our on-site correspondent and letting us know what happened in the building, including off-air happenings on the show that you attend. All right. So speaking of which, let's start getting to our phone calls, and I'm sure likely some of that will include Charlotte Ronda Rousey talk. If not, we'll certainly get to it. Let's begin with Chris in Warner Robins, Georgia, our first caller. Chris, good to hear from you. Happy New Year. What you think of SmackDown?
Same to you, Wade. It was a really good show. It was short, like you said it was, and it was kind of like, threw you off a little bit because you're like, that's it? But it was good. Thing was, it's still awe-inspiring to see John Cena able to, just drive a crowd electric, and then you contrast that with Roman's reaction, which is on the same level, and their basic job was to get Roman to that level. So, it's kind of nice to watch that contrast and finally got him there.
I think that's a good opening color point, Brandon. Look at where we are. Roman Reigns getting booed, and you want him to be booed. John Cena getting cheered, not booed, when you want him to get cheered. Roman getting booed, despite the fact that some crowds have been cheering the bloodline and the cool factor and the dominance. Yet tonight they got what they wanted. And I think part of it, and let me know what you think, is Roman is being mean to Sammy, and fans like Sammy more than they want to cheer the bloodline for being cool. Obviously with Cena, and this happens with, you know, every generational star, they, you know, the nostalgia factor breathes life into them, some for longer than others. You know, sometimes it doesn't last very long. The honeymoon period or the novelty wears off. But with Cena right now, there's a generation of people attending WWE shows who weren't necessarily part of the crowds booing him 10 years ago or rejecting him 15 years ago. They just see him as a star, and they get to say, I was witness to John Cena in a big match. The storyline is really well told, but it shouldn't be taken for granted or overlooked. WWE got the reaction that they wanted, and I have been saying on podcasts for, you know, 15 years, this idea of, oh, shades of gray, and oh, let the fans choose, and any reaction is a good reaction, and it's inevitable fans are going to cheer the heel and boo the baby face. It's like, no, it never was inevitable, and it was never the ideal scenario. Sometimes it was just a consolation prize that companies and bookers and wrestlers chose to embrace and act like, well, that's what I meant to do. It's like when you trip and then you jog, like, oh, I just wanted to jog. Like, no, you wanted a certain reaction, you got a different one, and now you're rationalizing it. Tonight, I think they got exactly the reaction they wanted, and it's fun when things come together like that. Brandon, your thoughts?
Yeah, I think that it's really cool, in particular, the juxtaposition between John Cena and Roman Reigns at this stage of their careers, because the original version of Roman Reigns was a byproduct of John Cena and the fact that Cena had to be the babyface no matter how the crowd reacted to him, no matter what the crowd may have wanted, no matter what may have been best for storytelling at the time, and who they were going to Bigfoot to make sure that stayed the designation. And for a long time, we were going down that same path again with Roman Reigns. And they course corrected. And as a result, you have the hottest character that WWE has had in a long, long time. And it's fun. It's fun to know that Reigns is getting this opportunity to thrive and succeed in this role that he fits so clearly into, rather than it be a situation where we just look back at him with reverence once he's gone, like Cena is getting now. Cena is getting the reactions that they desire for him and that they desired for him when he was a full-time wrestler, now only because absence tends to make the heart grow fonder. And a lot of these people were kids or maybe teenagers when Cena was a full-time wrestler, and it was the cool thing to do to boo John Cena. And when he was there every week, you know, Bigfooting other wrestlers that people may have liked more at the time, it was easy to boo him. And now he's not around very much. He puts over other guys. He comes in for a cup of coffee and he leaves again. And people think fondly of, hey, you know, he was the man when I was younger. And so I think it's cool that we're getting to see Roman Reigns thrive as he should have been booked, you know, juxtaposed to John Cena, where we never got that opportunity to see what could have been if they had run with something different.
And I'll just add, it's not the major point you made, but I don't know that John Cena was booed because he was Bigfooting people. John Cena, I think, was booed because he was a big dork. You know what
well,
I mean?
Yeah.
The wrestling
sure.
fans just looked at him and like, look at you, you know, and your jorts and your five knuckle shuffle and your loose STF and your cornball promos and your poopy jokes on the limousine and all that. And I bring that up not to like counter your point that it was all about Bigfooting, because certainly, you know, there was a sentiment of, oh, he wins all the time. But part of it is like, there's a WWE crowd cheering this big dork who cut that super corny promo last week against the super cool bloodline. Mm-hmm. And I sort of marvel at that happening right now, because we easily could be sitting here talking about how embarrassing for WWE it is that the crowd is chanting Cena sucks and booing him and cheering Roman Reigns, and it's going against the grain of what they want, and WWE would have to pull out the old thing of, oh, at least it's a reaction. And they don't. Like, they've told this story effectively enough, and then you have the passage of time with Cena and all that, that's led to this really optimal reaction, and it can't be understated how important Sammy and KO are to this formula working the way that it did tonight, too.
Like you mentioned, I think it's really important with Kevin Owens, too, because there is a real genuine connection between the audience and Kevin Owens, especially when he is in that babyface role. And I think that when Kevin Owens is opposite of anyone, he's likely to get the bulk of cheers when he is a babyface. But I think that, you know, if Owens says, hey, you know, Cena's cool, then the crowd is largely going to say, yeah, okay, Cena's cool.
All right, let's go back to Chris. Further thoughts?
You know, the thing is, they've announced now that there is talk of creating a second title for Raw. My question is, how do we get there? Because, like, you know, I think they may not want to even take the WWE title off Roman and just, like, you know, give it to somebody. But I'm trying to figure out how do we get to that point.
Boy, that's a whole other topic. I mean, they can do it any number of ways. I don't know if any of them jump out. Any of the obvious thoughts that come to mind jump out as good ways to do it. Brendan, have you put thought into that? Any thoughts?
Yeah, it seems like a challenge to me to make it make sense because, I mean, if Roman is the undisputed WWE Universal Champion, he's carrying around two titles. If you want to have a second championship, it would stand to reason that you would just split the titles that you merged. I don't think that there's going to be a clean way to do it. That isn't gonna come off like it's forced. And also to that point, you know, considering Roman is as dominant as he is, why wouldn't he then just want to go win that title too?
I know. Yeah. What else, Chris?
Just bringing up the Charlotte thing because we got to bring that up. I mean, kind of wow. She just comes in and wins it. Like, you know.
Yeah, I mean, we've got some emails on this too. Brandon, I mean, we ought to cover it. Charlotte returns and Rousey, after a 17-minute, you know, battle, says, yeah, I'll do it. And Charlotte beats her, and it seems like Charlotte's the babyface here. But, you know, not the most prestigious of wins, but if they're trying to protect Ronda and make news and give Ronda maybe a lighter schedule in the new year and Charlotte's ready to go, you know, there might be plenty of reasons they did it the way that they did. What do you think?
Yeah, I think there's a lot to unpack with this and to think about long term. My first thought was like, oh man, another reign for Charlotte this quickly. And Cole was quick to point out that this was number 14, which just seems, I mean, ludicrous when you think about it. So I fear that they're going to do some title swapping, but maybe not. I mean, maybe Charlotte just beats Ronda in what I presume will be a rematch, maybe at the Royal Rumble, and she moves on to whatever the next thing is at Elimination Chamber or WrestleMania. But I don't know. With these Charlotte title wins, they often involve title flip-flopping, and I hope that that's not the case here. I have mixed feelings on the Charlotte Flair character in general and the frequent turns and the way that she's been booked over time. But all of that is to say that SmackDown desperately needed an injection of a workhorse talent in the women's division and some star power. And Charlotte undoubtedly brings that. So in that respect, it's undoubtedly a strong positive. It was a newsworthy happening. I mean, it certainly is going to have people talking. It felt to me like much of the show did. It felt kind of like a statement of purpose for next year. It felt like Triple H kind of putting his foot down and saying, you know, this is where we're going. And I don't think that they were getting the results that they probably hoped out of Ronda as champion. I mean, you know, you could look at and criticize a lot of her promo work, and then Charlotte comes out there and she, you know, kind of proves you right with the very first line out of her mouth, flubbing the SummerSlam and Royal Rumble thing and kind of stumbling through her lines. So, yeah, I mean, it hasn't been a great run for Ronda. I think the title is probably better overall on Flair, but I still have some mixed feelings about, you know, how they did it and what it might mean in the coming weeks.
It's still too bad that after all this time, Ronda isn't able to deliver her lines more naturally and more slowly. It just feels like it's just a boulder rolling downhill with her reciting her lines. And I mean, whatever the reason is for that, it's a shame that she can't hit a natural cadence and slow down under the bright lights with, you know, and the live TV situation to do that, because it really does undercut, I think, the effectiveness and the emotional rhythm of the segment. But yeah, I mean, Charlotte's back and, you know, she's instantly champion. There's no, you know, there's no long-term story of her trying to get her belt back. And now it is going to be about her. You know, we'll see if Rousey is gone, and if so, for how long and under what circumstances she returns to issue a challenge. On that topic though, you know, Raquel Rodriguez put in a good showing. I jokingly put in my report at pwtorch.com. It was a game. Raquel Rodriguez, you know, the term you use for the person who no one thought was going to win, but she got in a little more offense than people anticipated, put up a good fight. But, you know, she was in a role that, you know, yes, if you look starting now and look backwards, she wasn't built up to become a star or to upset Ronda Rousey, but they did want to build her up enough so that it felt credible that she would last 17 minutes with Ronda, but it really served as a way to transition to Charlotte and give Ronda the out, the excuse of losing quickly, because Rodriguez put up a really competitive fight and wore Rousey out. And then, of course, you have Rousey, as I think Wade Barrett was the one who said, you know, her ego couldn't stand and not accept the challenge, but that's what doomed her. So, I think all told, if they want to just enter the new year with Charlotte with the title and give Rousey some lighter schedule, I think they went about it in a way that checked some boxes. You know, let's build up Raquel, even in losing. Let's give Rousey an out for losing, and let's have a big high-impact, buzz-generating moment to close out the year and have a new star to propel us forward after what is surely a big audience tonight for Cena. Now they've also seen Charlotte return, and that now, in their mind, you know, they hope will cause some people who maybe weren't watching to start watching again, because a star of her caliber is back and made such a big impact.
Yeah, I think there's definitely something to that. And I think that, you know, they established Raquel Rodriguez as a serviceable depth piece too tonight by giving her a strong outing against Rousey. I thought that the finish was really strong. One of the better in-ring moments really for Rousey in her run. I'm still sort of, every time I see Ronda, I'm sort of amazed by how much she seems to have regressed from the first time around. It's strange. That goes for in the ring and on the mic. I mean, not that she was ever a great promo, but everything just seemed to take a step back. And I think that they, at this point, I don't know if Rousey is sticking around. I had heard that maybe her deal was up after WrestleMania. But whatever the case is, if they can get Ronda back under contract, and I think that there is still money to be made with Ronda Rousey as a character overall, but I do think that she might be better served in a Brock Lesnar type schedule, where she's showing up for some big matches and not really doing the weekly TV, because I think that she's been exposed working the regular week to week schedule. And if they're going to do something like that, there is work to do, because I don't think that you can take Ronda as she is right now and just throw her in the Lesnar role, because obviously Lesnar is able to put on better performances in the ring and also on the microphone. So they've got to get more out of Rousey if they can put her in that type of, you know, schedule and that type of situation. But I do think that she'd be better served in a role like that.
Chris, do you have anything else you want to add?
No, I'm like, he's right. Like, I kind of thought to myself right when the match was happening, I was like, Ronda's really regressed. Like, she's not as smooth and crisp as she was. I mean, give and take, it's 6 years, but still, she's just not as, like, vibrant as she was beforehand. So, you know, it kind of, like, would work for her to take a lesser schedule. And, like, for Charlotte, I think it kind of has something to do with Bianca, but I don't know how exactly they get there, but, you know, we'll see.
Yeah. All right, great, Chris. Thanks. Appreciate it.
Welcome.
All right. Our number is 347-215-8558. Give us a call. Let us know what you thought of SmackDown. Next, we'll go to Brad in Florida. Brad, thanks for calling. What's on your mind about SmackDown tonight?
Yeah, so I'm literally standing in the shadow of the arena. I was there. I'd like to be an unofficial, I guess, on-site correspondent, if that's okay.
I'll let you be the official on-site correspondent, Brad.
Thank you, buddy. Thanks, guys.
Absolutely. Yeah. So, well, let me ask one question first, and I you probably have some thoughts you want to get out. But I mentioned earlier, and I don't want to forget to do this. We were talking about how there was this adrenaline rush of Cena being there and the bloodline and all the buildup for the match. And of course it seemed successful in the moment. Was there afterwards a sense of, oh, that went by pretty quick. We didn't really see a lot of Cena, or was that not really a thought in your mind, or did it not seem present with the crowd?
The crowd was thrilled, honestly, because I don't think anyone expected, you know, a 45-year-old John Cena to go, you know, 15 minutes after, you know, being off for a year, a year and a half, whatever. But it was like the perfect amount, and especially like where people thought, you know, he was taken out by the Usos in the arena. Like, people were very disappointed when he got ripped off the ring ropes and was down and out. And people were like, you know, really clamoring for him to get back up. And it was a very intense emotional reaction that the crowd was giving. When I tell you guys that from the minute we were walking into the arena in Tampa, the crowd was, you could tell it was an electric buzz in the air. It reminded me of, you know, going to an enormous NBA playoff game or a huge, you know, World Series game. Like, it was that type of adrenaline in the arena. You could feel it just walking in, let alone when you got inside. It was, honestly, I've been to, you know, maybe, I don't know, in the last 2 years, maybe 7 or 8 live events, one Raw in Madison Square Garden that didn't come close to this, about 5 or 6 SmackDowns, one in Long Island, one here, one there. I can tell you that this far and away blew away, from a crowd perspective, anything that I got from any of those others. This was incredibly intense, and everyone left extremely amped up and happy. And, you know, I want to answer any questions you have, but I could say that the Cena thing really wasn't the moment of the night. And I was actually just talking to someone as I was waiting on hold who came up to me as I'm outside the arena here. And he was telling me, and I agree with this, that Charlotte Flair's return was the moment of the night, which, you know, I don't know if it came across that way on TV, but there was, I mean, that was incredibly electric too. I mean, not to say take anything away from Cena and Kevin Owens and all that and the bloodline, but the moment of the night really was Charlotte. In the arena.
Was there any negativity towards Cena and any cheers towards the bloodline? And if so, at what points?
The Cena entrance when you know, Kevin Owens comes out, and there was honestly not much of a reaction. I'm not saying not much. I would say a decent reaction for Kevin Owens. And I don't know if that came across on TV, but when Cena came out, it was deafening. And that's not an exaggeration. When I say deafening, I legitimately mean deafening. It was these people were going berserk. I mean, berserk, with the music and him running down the ramp. It was so electric. And then when the bloodline came out, honestly, it was just as electric. Like, it was, you know, you just felt like you're getting the bad guys in this movie, you know, now you're, it felt like a major Hollywood motion picture production unfolding right in front of your eyes. And, you know, I've seen the bloodline I've seen Roman Reigns at every single event that I've been to, even though he's on a part-time schedule. For some reason, it's worked out for me that way. And when I tell you this was the most electric reaction I've ever seen for Roman, that's no exaggeration either. I mean, this was ridiculous. And even right now, there's such a buzz in the streets. Like, I'm staying at a hotel legitimately a one-minute walk from the arena, and there is a buzz here. People are, woo, like in the streets of Tampa. People are going, woo, and people are going, ooh, see, right now as I'm talking to you. It's insane.
Well, that's why these on-site reports are so fun. I mean, bringing us to the scene. As you're talking about that, I imagine like leaving Minnesota Wild playoff games over the years in the streets of St. Paul, just being a buzz, you know, with fans chanting, let's go Wild. And you know, walking to the parking ramp and parking garages or parking lots after a game and just flooding the streets that are closed off and that kind of thing. It's cool that's happening. And obviously that is a testament to the effectiveness of what WWE is doing and really the work that Cena's put in over the years and fans' nostalgia and fondness for him, along with, of course, contemporary stars that he shared the ring with and who did the majority of the work. Brandon, I'll jump in with a question for Brad about anything about tonight's show.
Yeah, it's really cool to hear that perspective about the in-person experience, because I felt something similar when I attended Survivor Series back in November, and a much different show with much different reasons really for people to be excited. But it was definitely a palpable excitement and intrigue that I hadn't really felt at a live WWE event in a long, long time. So it's interesting to hear that not only was not a singular experience that I had, but one that is carrying over even to TV tapings, where, granted, this was a very big TV taping relative to most others that WWE has had recently. But still, it's really neat to hear that. As far as the rest of the show, I definitely want to get your take on the opening segment with Bray Wyatt and LA Knight and how that came off.
Yeah, I mean, you know, the weird thing is that, like, you would think, like, oh, man, let's just get to the Cena part. Let's get to the Roman Reigns part. There was none of that. I mean, there was really none of that. And honestly, like, the part that people were kind of the most compelled by, at least, like, people just couldn't take their eyes off when this Howdy guy was walking down the aisle and how, you know, he was coming in the ring and just, you know, him eventually attacking Bray. I mean, LA Knight got actually a decent reaction too. You know, he was, you know, people were definitely into him. Like, it wasn't as much as people were into Bray, certainly, but there was definitely like an excitement. It wasn't like, oh, you know, this is like a nobody. Why is this guy in the ring with Bray? It was kind of like, you know, you heard a lot of like, yeah, you know, people were saying that in the crowd and people were laughing when he was talking, but in a kind of like, he's funny, he's really interesting to listen to type of way. You know, and they started wutting him, and then he came back with some clever response, like, I didn't come here to talk to you, or whatever he said. It was really good. And, you know, Bray, everyone gets out the flashlights on their cell phones and is holding him up. And it's just such a cool, like, look. It just makes you feel like you're at, you know, a concert or something. It was really very interesting, truthfully, the reaction to him. People were into it, but then when he started talking, people were just kind of listening to what he was saying. It wasn't like, you know, crazy cheering for him. And then people didn't really know what to think after Howdy attacked him. But it was just a very good segment. I mean, the whole thing about this show is that it flowed so well, and at least in the arena. Like, there was seemingly no filler. There was no, oh, my God, let's get through this type of spots. Everything was kind of like very well flowing into the next. And I don't know if it came across that way on TV, and I know TV adds so much, you know, with the commentary explaining to you what's going on and putting angles on there that you're not getting live. But did it flow well on TV to you guys as well?
I definitely felt like it was a well-paced show. It felt at times like there was a little bit a little bit too much, like, just promos and recap. And I think that I was particularly attuned to that just because we were left kind of wanting a couple extra minutes out of that main event. And I know that you guys live got a few extra minutes where we got a commercial break. So I think that it definitely made the live experience distinctive over what we were seeing on TV. But yeah, it definitely felt like a well-paced show, and it came off very strongly in terms of the crowd reaction, and the arena was very, very well lit. It was clearly full. I mean, it was on the high end of what WWE has done for TV this year.
I can imagine, too, some fans' memories of this show or the highlights being more so than typical ring entrances. You know,
yeah. You
have Bray Wyatt, you've got Uncle Howdy, you've got Ronda Rousey, who's the star.
Mm-hmm.
Charlotte with a what is this really happening moment. John Cena with that music, KO in the Bloodline. It was a night of big, long ring entrances in a modern arena filled to the last row of the third tier. With an event that if you attended it, you felt that you were attending something that every NFL fan in the country, even if they're not watching, knows is happening. And you're there because of all the heavy promotion during the NFL games on Fox the last 2 weeks. It had that we're here for this moment. And it's what I imagined when SmackDown moved to Fox that the shows would feel like more often than they have, which is probably unrealistic and unsustainable. But, when you think about where SmackDown was and the skepticism that SmackDown would be the A show when it moved to Fox and the SmackDown brand being damaged from years of being pre-taped or the B show or the loser in the draft, getting the consolation prizes each year, that has changed. And, part of it is the three-hour, two-hour dynamic, but not everything. Raw was 3 hours for a long time, and it was the A show, and you could make an argument the longer show should feel like the A show just because it's longer and more happens. So this just felt like a real peak moment for SmackDown on Fox with WWE putting a lot of planning into it and really wanting to draw a big number. I don't know how viewership's going to be affected by the fact that it's, in between Christmas and New Year's and it's going into a holiday weekend. I'm really curious to see what that number turns out to be. So anyway, Brad, I want to throw back to you and just comment more on the fan reaction specifically to what Bray was saying, and how did it meet or differ from your expectations in terms of how people reacted to him in person?
Well, it's interesting when he said there, when he's, oh,
go ahead, Brad.
That. When he
Brad,
said,
yeah.
when he
yeah.
said, you got me, right. When he said, I'm a bad guy or I, sometimes in the arena, it's a little hard to like hear the way they hold the mic. It doesn't come across the same way it does on television. But when he said, I'm a bad guy and I do bad things and, I've done bad things, people were kind of like, whoa, it wasn't like, yeah, Bray, awesome. It was kind of like, should we be cheering for this guy? There were some people that were like that. I could tell. They were almost, taken aback a little bit. But then, when L.A. Knight came out and he was kind of being a jerk, I think it was more clear to – I mean, the Bray thing, was like, a clear, force in the night to I think, at least my impression, and I think the impression of a lot of people. I was speaking to people on the way out. People were saying, oh, Charlotte, Roman, John Cena, Sheamus was unbelievable. People weren't saying anything about Bray. And I'm not saying that, that's an indictment upon him, but it just didn't resonate, I think, in the arena as much as really the attack by Howdy did on him. And people just kind of wondering who was that and what is that and what just happened? Holy crap. And that was kind of it, it wasn't like a really crazy reaction either way, if that answers the question.
Sure. Yeah. Brandon, do you have more you want to ask, Brad?
Just to follow up on the Bray Wyatt thing, I was going to say, to Brad's point about him not being the thing people were talking about. Now, granted, this was a loaded show and there were a lot of other things to talk about, but it kind of struck me that I've seen a lot of discourse on Twitter the last couple of days, how Avatar, the sequel to Avatar, is, you know, going to be one of the highest grossing movies of all time, but no one seems to be talking about it. And there's a comparison there, I think, to be made with Bray Wyatt, in that people get really excited about his appearances and him being on the show, and people clamored for him to come back, and the segments happen and people seem to enjoy them, but then they just don't go anywhere because typically he's not really saying much of anything. And I think that that's starting to happen again.
I thought this was newsworthy for a Bray segment. I think we needed something to get people going, and having Uncle Howdy step into the ring and in between them and stand next to Bray and L.A. Knight, right? I think the timing was perfect. Like, I knew it all along. I told y'all. Whoa. Uncle Howdy just gave Bray Sister Abigail. Let me roll out of the ring. This looks dangerous, and try to assess what's happened. I thought that was just enough to reinvigorate conversation and interest in this. I thought that they moved things forward. I think if they tried to belabor this two more weeks before getting to at least this, that would have been trouble. And having Bray just sort of stranded out there saying the same, oh, shucks, I want to be a good guy, but it's hard. I think it could have backfired. I think this, they got to this when they needed to, and I think people are now going to expect more developments and more answers. I also, by the way, liked a lot that Bray addressed attacking the cameraman and essentially, you know, was about to apologize for it and showed regret, because you can't be a babyface if you're attacking a guy just doing his job. I'm sorry. It's just like, whether, you know, you can't run a wrestling company with a guy who fans have mixed feelings about and expect them to cheer him if he's just indiscriminately beating up people who are just showing up to do their job and aren't the stars of the show and didn't promote. So at least he apologized, and then it fits his character, and the announcers really emphasized, oh, he doesn't have control of himself. So I thought that they moved things along in this way, but it is weird that by the end of the show, you know, we're thinking about the Bloodline and Cena, and we're thinking about what happened with Charlotte and Ronda, and they did a pretty big angle for Bray. I think they moved things forward, but it made the show feel very important and lived up to the billing, and a big audience saw it, so that's all good. But by the end, yeah, it didn't feel like it would be the thing that was generating a buzz afterwards. Brad, back to you for any follow-up on that or anything else you want to add about the live experience.
No, well, I don't know if this was on or you saw this on television, but when Ricochet hit Gunther with that chair, it seemed to be an accident. It seemed to be he was supposed to miss him, and he actually hit him. And Gunther seemed to be very hurt walking out after they went to commercial. It didn't, you know, I don't know if that if you guys caught that. The other thing that was funny was Samantha Irvin, the ring announcer, like when the Bloodline was coming in, bopping her head to the Bloodline's music as if it was her favorite song. Like, you know, like you're listening to your favorite song.
Wow.
And you're just grooving. Like, she's just so into it. And, you know, they don't announce until after the fireworks come off and everything. You know, there's, you know, accompanied to the ring by blah, blah, blah. Here's, you know, your undisputed champion. There was no, she was just so bopping her head and moving her body in like full motion. It was really funny just to see that in the little timekeeper's area. And it was weird when Charlotte, before the show, the dark match was Liv Morgan and Tegan Knox against Xia Li and Sonya Deville. Throughout the arena, throughout this entire dark match, for some reason, as well as into like where Michael Cole comes out and the announcers come out and whatever, there was woo going through the arena, woo throughout the whole arena. Yeah, and see, these people are doing it too, and they're right behind them, like, woo, and it was weird, and it just. It almost was like a foreshadowing. And I know my friend Matt from Delaware calls into the show a lot. He says, you know, sometimes they plant people in the crowds to start certain chants or do certain things. It was really strange. It kind of made me think, like, maybe, I don't know, what are they wooing for? I guess it's just something you do at a WWE show. I don't know, almost like hell yeah or what or whatever. But it just turned out to, that when she came back, it was just so insane. People were doing it, and people are still doing it. I just saw these people, like, they're literally still wooing. And on the way out of the arena, there were some people going, doo, 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 you know, as you're walking through the tunnel on the way out and whatever. But most people were wooing. Most people were going, woo, and people are still doing that. So it was just kind of interesting, and that was just an observation. And when Raquel lost the match, instead of kind of going back up the tunnel and kind of looking like looking back at the ring, like, damn, I lost my opportunity or I missed out, or, you know, kind of staring at Ronda, she went through the timekeeper's area and kind of went through the crowd back, like through the side. And I said, well, that's kind of weird that she's not, you know, kind of escaping back up the tunnel. And that's, I literally said that to my wife, and then, of course, Charlotte came out, and now we know the reason why she wasn't supposed to be in the way there. But it was very interesting, even with Charlotte going in the crowd, people were mobbing her, as I'm sure you saw on TV. It was just really intense, and that was, truthfully, I think 90% of the people that were there would say that that was actually the moment of the night, which you wouldn't think with John Cena and Roman Reigns, but that really was.
What was the crowd reaction and the sustained interest in Solo and Sheamus?
Very interested. And when Solo won the match, I mean, people loved Sheamus, and when he was doing the 10 beats of the, you know, the 10 beats and everything, people were very into it. But when Solo won, you would have thought John Cena just won the match. And that's not an exaggeration. Like, there was such a reaction. I said, wow, the Bloodline is, like, really popular. Like, it's just funny. This guy, you know, comes in from NXT, and you know, he's been there 3 months, and I understand who he's associated with and who his brethren are, you know, in this group. But it was just – there was such a crazy – like, people leaping out of their seats with both hands in the air. And you'll even see it if you watch it back on television, on the replay. Like, you'll notice, like, there was such a positive reaction to him winning that match that – I was really surprised by it. I was incredibly surprised by my daughter even said to me, she said, you know, people love Solo. Like, you know, it was just crazy because, you know, he was not acting like a good guy. You know, it was just very interesting, that reaction in the arena to Solo.
Did anything happen off air before or after the show, some other matches or anything else that only the crowd saw?
Yeah, you got Liv Morgan and Tegan Nox, like I said, in that tag team matchup. Liv Morgan won with Oblivion. And afterwards, after it went off the air, Sami Zayn was in the ring. They started beating up Cena. Cena tried to grab the mic and give the crowd a speech, then got attacked by Sami Zayn and the Usos and just was beaten down completely. Drew McIntyre comes in, Sheamus comes in, and the Brawling Brutes come in and basically saved Cena. Kevin Owens was, like, kind of laid out on the side of the ring. He eventually came back in the ring, and they all had Sami surrounded. And Sami was surrounded by all of them. He was trying to, like, kind of weasel his way out of it, but every escape route was taken. Cena gave Sami Zayn an attitude adjustment. KO gave him a stunner. And then Sami Zayn kind of rolled out of the ring and retreated. I forget what happened to the Usos. I think they just got knocked out of the ring or something. And John Cena again took the mic, and he thanked everyone in Tampa. He said, when I found out this was, you know, 10 minutes from where I live, I had to be here. Thank you for 20 years. Have a great New Year's Eve. Don't celebrate too hard tomorrow night. And let's make it a great 2023. And everyone was – it was great. No, not a person left. And it was really awesome. And then he was talking about, you know, these guys in the ring with me. He's like, I can't thank them enough. And, you know, they know they're off air. So, you know, they're kind of hugging each other. Sheamus is hugging Drew, and, you know, Cena's hugging the Brutes and hugging Butch and Ridge Holland. And then, you know, it just kind of closed with Cena's music and Cena kind of saying, thank you, you know, without you guys, there's nothing and all that stuff. And it was just really, really, like, the perfect way to end it. And everyone was saying, like, you know, this was perfect. Like, it was the perfect length of time. It was just the perfect setting, the perfect, you know, it just, really came across great, and that's kind of the way it ended. But Drew and Sheamus did come in with the Brutes to save Cena from this attack by the Usos and Sami Zayn. Roman just left. Roman was, like, down and out on the ramp, and he was not involved in this.
How about before the show?
What did you say?
How about before SmackDown went on the air?
Oh, it was just the Liv Morgan match. That was it.
Okay.
And then obviously, yeah, that was it. But really, I mean, just to me, as good as it could ever be, almost feeling like you went to a pay-per-view. And people, again, like, still, you know, and I'll let you guys get to other callers, but people here, it's like a party atmosphere. It feels like your team just won a playoff game. And you're in the streets with people who are just really happy. And that's what, you know, you want people to leave with a smile on their face. That's I think, what they accomplished tonight.
Well, Brad, thank you. Appreciate you painting the picture for us of what it was like there tonight on a big episode of SmackDown to close out the year.
Yeah, thank you, guys. Brandon, Wade, thank you so much for having me on. I'll let you get to other things, but have a good evening, and I'll talk to you next week or whatever.
Perfect. Thanks, Brad. All right. You can join us 347-215-5558. Let's stay in Florida in the Tampa area and go to Scott from Tampa next. Scott, welcome. What's on your mind about SmackDown tonight?
Welcome, guys. Thanks for having me. I actually was at the show as well. I just got home.
Yeah, cool.
Just got in the house. It was crazy getting down there. I mean, it was packed out, so I missed everything that Brad talked about. And so I don't know, you know, after that, I didn't volunteer to be I didn't email you to be a volunteer. I didn't know I was going to the show until Cena was announced a few weeks ago. But, no, I thought the show was really fun for the 2 hours. The matches were great. The biggest surprise for us, obviously, in the biggest moment of the night was Charlotte coming back and winning the title. And I guess my question I'll start with is, you know, because we – in the section that I was sitting in, I sat next to a couple of guys who, you know, we also are not fans of Ronda Rousey and feel that she just, you know, she doesn't come off as a big star. And, you know, we're all speculating as to what her future may be and you know, thinking that obviously, a WrestleMania match with Becky, you know, is what we thought and how, you know, what we were speculating that's when she'll lose the title. So her losing in that way to Charlotte was very surprising. So my question to you is, and I'm sorry if you guys already addressed this, but, like, you know, what does this mean for Rousey's future? Is she, you know, you think a rematch is up next, or is it, you know, maybe she's done in a couple of months, or, you know, Charlotte and Becky, is that the WrestleMania match? Like, you know, it left me with a lot more questions than answers, even though I love the moment, you know, and the ramp where Charlotte went into the crowd and celebrated, like, I was, you know, was right near that section, so I got to get a close up of her. But my question to you guys again is, like, wait, what do we go from here with them two and that whole fiasco and that storyline with Rousey and Charlotte and even Becky?
Yeah, I mean, it's a bit of a wait and see. I mean, I know there was just an assumption that Ronda Rousey and Becky Lynch would have a rematch. I don't know if that, you know, that could still happen. They've set up tonight if they want for Charlotte versus Ronda Rousey instead, based on what happened. I'm taking a wait and see. I mean, if Ronda's contract is coming up and they don't want to pay her, they don't think it's worth paying her, you know, they're going to want to get something out of her on the way out in terms of more big matches, and they might hit them more rapid fire. And part of it is wanting to draw SmackDown ratings. And, you know, WWE, I think, has struck a good balance in terms of conveying to Fox executives, you paid us a lot of money, and yes, our priority is the biggest matches at WrestleMania and SummerSlam and the Rumble and all that, but we're going to put big matches, or matches that we frame convincingly for our viewers and maybe the executives, more importantly, we frame them as a big deal. You know, the Usos and New Day and yet another match, but they hyped it and framed it as so historically important that it felt like, wow, this is on free TV, not a pay-per-view. So we might see some big Ronda matches on SmackDown, not just on pay-per-view. So when we plot out her future and whether it's long-term or short-term, you know, I wouldn't rule out seeing a number of big matches with Ronda. I think they've – Brandon, have they has Ronda's star power and mystique and gravitas, as Wade Barrett used to describe Solo Sikoa tonight, has that dropped off because she's become so commonly on the show as sort of just another wrestler alongside Shayna Baszler lately?
I kind of feel like it's more because of the performances she's turned in. I think that, you know, you can have people appearing on a regular basis, on a weekly basis, and still have them feel like big stars. But I think where Ronda has kind of had, you know, so many disappointing performances, both, you know, on the microphone and in the ring, that's been the primary factor in her star power feeling diminished.
Yeah. Back to you, Scott. I mean, my short answer is I don't want to know. I want to see it play out. But it's tonight throws a whole wrench into it. And then, yeah, I mean, just the idea that Ronda Becky was once sort of seemed like a lock and now it's not shows that there's plans are subject to change.
Yeah, I mean, I think for me, it really came across that how Rousey is not a big star. Like, to me, and I don't know what Brad thought, but to me it felt like even Raquel seemed like a bigger star in terms of, like, reactions, when she came out versus when Rousey came out. Like, of course she had some of her still had supporters, and then there's fans who are going to, you know, or booing because of the storyline. But I felt a lot of, you know, that go-away heat that we talk about sometimes with certain stars, and that's how she comes across. And it's just, I thought this tonight was one of her better performances, which is not saying much. Even when she got on the mic, like after the match, like no one heard a word she said. Like what was she saying? Like before Charlotte came out, and even when Charlotte was in the ring, like literally she just sped talk and she was so low, like no one heard a word she said.
I know. We talked about it earlier, that, you know, she speed talked through the promo, and she said, yeah, you probably want to face me at the Rumble. Your arm is probably feeling better. If it is, you probably want to face me at the Rumble. And then, you know, Charlotte kind of called her bluff. Well, said, oh, not the Rumble, but sooner than that. Yeah, go ahead, Brad.
Well, first she said SummerSlam.
Right,
and,
yeah.
And
yeah.
Then kind of corrected herself. Oh, you probably want to face me sooner than that. So the Rumble, like it didn't come off well at all.
Yeah.
Well, I guess it's good that we didn't hear it in the arena, because that would have been terrible. Well, the other thing I would point out for tonight is, you know, just seeing John Cena in person. I've never seen him in person, and being a fan most of my life. I'm only 30 years old, but most of my life being a wrestling fan.
Wow.
And for really the last 20 years mainly growing up in the Cena era, so it's kind of, yeah, you know, special for me to get to see him in person. I didn't have a chance to see him last year when he was on SmackDown last August during that story with Roman. So the moment that he was announced as that he was showing up tonight, I jumped online and I bought tickets, and he moved a lot of tickets. I mean, it was I think, you know, at the time before he was announced, it was maybe 5,000 or 6,000 tickets were sold. And as of today, at least WrestleTix on Twitter announced like over 14,000. And boy, you can tell from this amount of traffic and how difficult it was to get in and out of the building. But, it was just special to see him. But I just couldn't help notice like the balding spot and, you know, him not, you know, getting much action in the ring. So, I mean, you know, and then there's some speculation, and some of the guys next to me were saying, perhaps, as I mentioned, you know, Charlotte winning her 14th title, and that, you know, she may surpass Flair, and, you know, within the next year. And one of the guys next to me brought up Cena, and obviously it's a long shot. I don't think, you know, definitely I wouldn't see him beating Roman, but is there any chance or shot that we could possibly see Cena with another title reign? Like, you know, obviously he's approaching 50, and that's, you know, he's super part-time at this point, and I don't know how many matches he has left in him, but is that a possibility, a faint possibility of Cena just getting, like, one last title reign and surpassing Flair and beating that record? Or am I just being too much of a mark and fanboy?
I No, I wouldn't rule it out, Scott, at all. But, I mean, no, it's WWE. I mean, and he's not too old for that to happen. He could have three more reigns before he's 60. I don't think he's going to be the guy. He's not going to win the title and be a workhorse working a bunch of house shows and all that. He's
right.
Moved beyond that. But, you know, I don't know how much – I mean, I know Cole talked about Charlotte's number of title reigns, but I think this generation is kind of smart to the idea that, you know, some people stack their record. Triple H was pretty notorious for that. Sometimes doing a title change just to add one to your number, and I think the feeling is Charlotte was part of that, you know, that's how she was booked. You know, I think length of title reign, I think WWE has been stressing with Roman. How long, and obviously with the Usos and New Day, how long you hold the title has been stressed more than the number of title reigns you have, which I'm a fan of. I think another factor is how many title defenses you have, and that's more of a big thing in Japan traditionally over the decades, is how many title defenses do you have. So, you know, I don't know if it's that – honestly, I think you might be thinking more about it than WWE. You know, I think fans might be – some fans who still value that number might be thinking more about it. I think that the number is kind of, you know, sketchy anyways with Rick, and different people, you know, consider different reigns as part of the tally or not part of the tally. And I don't think WWE, with the success that they're having and the revenue they're generating, are too hung up on that. But it doesn't mean if they don't think they can utilize it, they won't for a storyline. But I don't think they feel they have an obligation to stress that, or that it's a priority for them. Brandon, do you agree with that assessment?
Yeah, I mean, I could go either way. I certainly think that there is a world where WWE feels like giving their self-proclaimed greatest of all time the record would be beneficial to their presentation and what they want the legacy of the world titles to mean. By the same token, I mean, they aren't really distancing themselves from Ric Flair all that much, despite, you know, some of the more recent controversies. So I also think that it's possible that they're content to let that record stand. I think you're probably right. They're not thinking about it a ton, but if Cena's schedule frees up for a month or two and he can make, you know, most of the TVs and they have this opportunity, you know, I could see them doing it.
Scott, anything else you want to share with us about your in-arena experience? We won't keep you for too long because we did spend a lot of time with Brad, but anything else about Bray or Charlotte or Cena or Sammy that stood out to you that you'll remember or find noteworthy tonight?
Yeah. I mean, I definitely, you know, Bray, I got into the arena and literally got into my seats just as the show was starting and Bray's entrance. So definitely, you know, just seeing the huge reaction that he gets, and obviously it comes off well on TV and just the same in person. Like, you know, he's just such a mega superstar, I think, in the eyes of fans, and, you know, just the reaction he gets. Everyone, you know, obviously was speculating as to, you know, who's Uncle Howdy, and obviously we can't really tell who that is, but definitely we're all intrigued. You know, Sammy, he's just remarkable. Every time he jumped on screen, it was just a huge Usy or Sammy chant. You know, a couple of guys next to me also were from Montreal, so they, you know, known him and known him for years. So definitely just a huge fan base from him. As far as just in the arena experience, you know, I was there for Raw in July, and this is a night and day. Like, you know, Raw was a 3-hour show, and I got to see part of the dark match before and after. And also tonight, I didn't get to see the dark match before the show, and there was no dark match after. But I just thought tonight was a much better experience. You know, being that it just felt like a huge, you know, party atmosphere. Like, you know, I caught what Brad said at the end. It was just like everyone was there to have fun, and you know, I had a good time. You know, just getting over a cold, and my voice is not as clear as it normally is. And I think just me screaming so loud, Charlotte coming out, and I didn't expect that. So I guess I'll pay for that tomorrow. But yeah, I just thought it was a great, you know, it was a great show for just 2 hours. Obviously, I could do without the traffic. You know, caught an Uber and Lyft there, and it's still it wasn't a very pleasant experience, but as far as the show itself, I thought they did a fantastic job with just the four matches, and I guess just being in that arena, yeah. You know, being those twice as many people there as it was in July, And, you know, SmackDown, I've said it for a while. I think it's the best wrestling show, you know, at least for me, and it's been like that for years now. So it's always, you know, fun to watch and just sort of be there in person. I'm really glad that that I did bought the ticket and I had a nice, good seat. And I got to see John Cena. So, you know, hey, I ticked that off my bucket list.
Excellent. Scott, I appreciate you calling. Good talking to you.
Yes, same here, guys. All right, guys. Thanks. Happy New Year, guys, and talk to you soon.
Yeah, Happy New Year. Thank you so much. We'll hear from you again, I hope. All right, let's jump next to Grant in Detroit. Grant, thanks for calling. Happy New Year. Welcome to the show. What'd you think of SmackDown?
All right, Happy New Year to you, too. I thought it was actually a pretty good show. You know, a couple odd moments, but you know, it seemed pretty good for the most part.
Yeah, so what's on your mind? Why'd you call?
So, well, the caller before me just kind of brought it up. That whole Ronda segment seemed really odd. Like it. I don't know if she on her way out the door. Like, you usually don't see them take a title off somebody like that, usually for no reason. Just in normally when we see stuff like that, quick title changes like that. Normally, it's usually something behind it that usually come out later, but it just the whole segment just seems strange. But my question to you is like, so does that mean we're gonna have to deal with another face Charlotte run, which historically have not been good?
I think that's a great question, Brandon. Do we assume, based on how Ronda has been portrayed with Baszler lately, that this means Charlotte's a babyface, or is this just Charlotte coming back and just operating in a way that gets her a championship and a chance to brag about being at the top of the division, but she actually, as of next week, makes it pretty clear that she's a heel?
Yeah, I think it really depends on what the status is for Ronda Rousey. I think that it's going to depend largely on whether or not she is around for a potential rematch with Charlotte right away, or if they're saving that for down the road, or not at all. Obviously, yeah. Rousey is an established heel along with Shayna Baszler, so if the two of them are sticking around and are going to face Charlotte, then I do expect that Flair will be the babyface in that scenario and presumably beyond. But you never know with Charlotte Flair. I mean, that has been part of the issue with her over the years is very frequent turns and oftentimes lackluster results when she is a babyface. So I'm willing to let it play out. I mean, I don't want to be too down on the idea of her being a babyface or her having the title again, but I am, you know, cautiously approaching this because I do think that there has been a tendency to kind of get a little sloppy with her character direction. But this is also the first time we've ever seen her under Triple H's booking. So,
good point. Yeah, very good point. I'm kind of out of the guessing game when it comes to Charlotte. I mean, you know, the number of various presentations of her and the fact that she's a better heel than a face, but now she's sort of, you know, almost entering a legacy star level of tenure and accomplishment. And, you know, they tend to get a positive reaction. I don't know if she's there yet, where it's like, it's Charlotte. I mean, tonight she was. I don't know. It's you know, it's kind of like Seth Rollins. You know, there's just this constant conundrum of what's the best, you know, here's why he or she should be a face. Here's why he or she should be a heel. Crowds are responding this way, but we're portraying them this way. How do we handle that? It's an ongoing thing with Charlotte. And sometimes it does, as you point out, comes down to who's her opponent. She's one of those wrestling characters who kind of plays the role based on the lay of the land. Otherwise, I'll wait and see. But yeah, maybe Paul Levesque has a very strong opinion on this that we just haven't seen manifest yet.
Unfortunately, very similarly to Seth Rollins, Charlotte rarely turns. She just becomes.
Oh, I know. I know. God, exactly. All right, Grant, anything else you want to bring up?
The only other thing I had, it was one of those, like, blink and you missed it moments. Are they turning Top Dollar or Hit Row, like, heel?
That's Yeah, we haven't covered
was
that.
Also. Oh, okay. Yeah, I missed the beginning of the show.
No, no, I'm saying we haven't covered that, so I'm glad you brought that up. I can guarantee you that backstage segment was not planned a month ago, because it took him screwing up the move to inspire that segment. And, you know, I'm sort of sympathetic to him for Top Dollar for, you know, I mean, there's having fun at someone's expense, and then there's pushing the limit, and then there's just going too far. And it felt kind of like, not bullying, but it did feel like a little more than was called for. And Cole and Barrett are jumping in, oh, you shouldn't be doing top those moves anyway, which, you know, I sort of agree with. But nevertheless, it's an interesting thing. I think it's just a one-off to set up the match next week. But, you know, I'm not ruling out that it's not the impetus for a turn. What do you think, Brandon?
Yeah, I mean, by rule, I mean, just based on what each wrestler was doing, you'd think it was a heel turn for all of the babyfaces, but clearly they're not actually doing that. So yeah, I mean, it might be the impetus for a turn for Hit Row. I mean, they certainly seem to have lost a huge amount of steam already. And so perhaps a heel turn is something that they think they could try to get something else out of them. To me, it just feels like that act is missing, missing the key piece, which
Swerve
Strickland. Yeah. Yeah. I mean, without Swerve, that they just don't feel like the same act. It could be a ploy here to get them in cast in a different light and maybe try something different, or it could just be, like you said, Wade, to set up the match next week, which I like. I mean, I do like that they're setting up these Rumble qualifiers. I hope that they do several of them and not just like one or two, because WWE has done that in the past, and I would like to see, you know, guys actually earn their way into the Rumble match.
I'd like an explanation for who gets to declare themselves in the match and who has to qualify, and then who just gets to show up unannounced, who, you know, with no qualifying in any way, shape, or form. I mean, I think that it'd be a fun challenge for them to explain it all, but, you know, the part of me that values logic and structure, which is substantial, you know, does roll his eyes a little bit at the archaic nature of how people get into the Rumble. Grant, any closing words from you?
I think that is all I have for you, gentlemen, for the night. So, you know, y'all enjoy it, and I will probably talk to y'all Monday.
Cool. Great. Thanks, Grant. Talk to you then. Happy New Year. All right. Let's jump to Ryan. Ryan in Cumberland, Maryland. Ryan, what have you got for us tonight?
My first question is on LA Knight. What are the odds that he scores a major upset at Royal Rumble because of Uncle Howdy's interference and sort of like a Undertaker-Kane dynamic where that sets up the match for WrestleMania, Uncle Howdy and Bray Wyatt?
By major upset? Oh, not winning the Rumble, just winning the match.
Right. I'm saying LA Knight
gets
the victory ever.
Yeah, it always gets me. Royal Rumble match. Mm. Yes, I think there's a legit chance that LA Knight wins. I mean, LA Knight's doing good work on the microphone. I think Paul Levesque is a fan of his. I think he gets him. Certainly LA Knight felt Vince McMahon didn't get him and, you know, put up enough of a fuss that Vince was willing to just dump him. And Paul Levesque came in, and one of his first big decisive moves that showed I'm not Vince McMahon was recalibrating what he wanted to do with Knight. And I think Knight's doing really good mic work and looks like he belongs out there. I think his acting has been, you know, right on beat. The rhythm of what he does fits the WWE TV aesthetic. I think he's, you know, just kind of turnkey to do what he's doing. Does that mean he should beat Bray Wyatt even under tainted circumstances? I'm not convinced it's the case, but I'm also not willing to rule it out. Brandon, you know, not that it would mean a lot if Uncle Howdy cost him the match, but it would be something LA Knight could brag about for a long time. What do you think?
Yeah, I'm glad we're getting to this because it is something I wanted to talk about when we touched upon the Bray Wyatt stuff earlier. I think that the idea that LA Knight could potentially be an upset candidate against Bray Wyatt just 3 or 4 weeks ago would be pretty laughable. But here we are a month later, and it seems like it's a genuine possibility, largely because of the work that LA Knight's been doing on the microphone. I'm with you, Wade. I think he has been excellent at times, you know, even upstaging Bray to some extent, even with all the theatrics. I think that the crowd has caught on that he is a really interesting, dynamic promo, and you could see tonight. I mean, they were getting into it, and they were throwing the what chant at him, and oftentimes I think that audiences sort of test the limits or the ability of a heel when they throw that what chant out. I mean, sometimes it's just very clearly because they just don't care for the segment and don't care for the character. But I think a lot of times they're looking to agitate and to see how people respond to it. And LA Knight had a great response, and it you know, he took it in stride. It didn't cut him. It didn't, you know, throw him off any. I thought that he had a really, really good night. And I think with that in mind, and with the introduction of Uncle Howdy as this standalone character that is not just a, you know, an alternate personality of Bray, it introduces a really interesting scenario for the Rumble where, yeah, I think LA Knight could win.
Ryan, what's next?
I have a question on Sami Zayn for you. Do you think Jessica Carr will become his exclusive referee based on what she did to Sami on a recent house show, giving him a Stone Cold Stunner, and just keeping that story alive that you never know what she might do to Sami Zayn next?
I want to know the inside story on why Caleb Braxton doesn't interview Paul Heyman anymore. That's what I want to know. I have no idea, Ryan, as is often the case with your second or third question. But, you know, having referees who are the bane of the existence of a heel can be kind of, you know, fun. How many times did Ric Flair shove Tommy Young and get in his face, and Tommy Young would stand up to him and get right back at him? Yeah, I don't know. Any thoughts on that, Brandon?
I just want to know why Jessica Carr was calling out Cena's spots for him in the main event.
Oh, man.
Did you hear it?
No.
She was loud. It was.
Oh, man.
I don't know if it was because it was so loud in there, but
yeah.
when Cena was trying to tag in, and Sami was trying to tag in Roman right at the end of the match, Jessica Carr is standing right in the middle of the ring, and she says very clearly, "Don't move, don't move, don't move, tag."
Oh, God. Wow. No, I didn't pick up on that. That's not good. All right, Ryan, you got a third one for us?
Yeah, I have a question on Roman Reigns for you. Michael Cole made a comment that he surpassed John Cena on his title reign. But isn't it more realistic that Cena had a better title reign since he defended that title a lot more often? But Cena was never really a part-timer when he had those titles. He was busting and grinding about every week defending that on the road.
Yeah, I mean, it does come. We talked a little earlier about, you know, how do you quantify in a worked business and showbiz what title reign means the most? And it's whatever the promotion stresses and convince their audience to care about. It can be the days you hold it. It can be the number of defenses you have. It can be the number of high profile, memorable pay-per-view title defenses you have. You know, house shows don't always count. It's been awkward at times how little house show matches and title defenses have counted. But yeah, it can be consecutive days, number of reigns, number of defenses. With Cena and Reigns, I mean, it's in the eye of the beholder. I mean, do you value Roman's impact as a long-term champion with only a few very important title defenses, or do you value the workhorse, the guy who's there every weekend and connecting with the fans in person at non-televised events and also defending the title more regularly on pay-per-view? I don't have a real strong opinion either way because it is so subjective. Brandon, do you have a key stat that you look to?
No, not particularly. I do think, though, that if I'm just looking in terms of memorable title reigns, surely the totality of John Cena's championship runs is a bigger deal than Roman Reigns, but to me, I mean, if we're just talking most impressive singular runs, I'll take this run by Roman Reigns over any of Cena's individually.
Ryan, do you have a fourth one for us?
Final question on Charlotte Flair. Do you think she'll work have more title defenses than what Ronda Rousey was spending? Because even when Ronda worked, she was just doing like tag matches with Shayna Baszler and not always defending the title. So do you think we'll see that championship match a little bit more from Charlotte?
You know, it really depends on how they want to frame her. If she's a babyface and they want to frame her as a fighting champion who's helping to use her star power to elevate other wrestlers just by having a 3 or 4 or 5 week program with them, or a one-off match even after some sort of, you know, qualifying match, they might have her defend the title a lot. If they're going to have her be a heel, or for whatever reason, they just want her title matches to be more scarce and feel more special because it's worked for Roman, I could see them doing that too. And I don't know that there's a right answer, because it really does depend upon how long they want her to have the title and how they want fans to perceive her. So I'm not punting on it. I just think the honest answer is I could see them making a wise decision based on context that could be a wide range of frequency of title defenses. We've seen so many different ways that they've approached it. And with Charlotte, it's tonight. That's all we know is what happened tonight. So I don't know yet. Brandon, do you have a guess, and do you have a preference for her?
I also just think it really has a lot to do with who they're lining up as potential challengers. Because remember, one of the reasons I think I'm overall high on Flair's return tonight is just because the SmackDown Women's Division was so needing an influx of a workhorse at the top of that division. And I'm scrolling through the SmackDown roster right now, And the same problem that existed with Ronda Rousey is also going to carry over to Charlotte Flair, where there just aren't a lot of options, especially high-level options. So it's hard to defend the title frequently without just repeating matches. And yeah. I don't think that that's something you want to do with low-level challengers. And unfortunately, the vast majority of challengers that Charlotte is going to have at this point, I think would fall under that level, not necessarily to any fault of their own, but just the way they've been booked and the way they've been defined down. I think that, you know, you could get Raquel Rodriguez built back up and put in that position at some point. But as I'm scrolling through this roster here, I mean, the only person that really jumps out to me as a major challenger to Ronda outside of a potential, you know, like Shayna Baszler match beyond Ronda Rousey is the returning Lacey Evans. And I know that they really wanted that match at one point. I don't view that as a hot issue, but I don't know.
Yeah, you can also make the case that the fact that they don't have a lot of challengers to face Charlotte in a lot of matches, and that's a reason not to ever do it a lot, is also the reason to do it more, so that there's more wrestlers sharing the ring with her, just so that you're investing, you know, you're sort of planting seeds for later so that they actually have that history with her in the ring.
Mm-hmm.
I'm not taking sides on it as much as just going, I could see them going, oh, God, we got no one. We need to have Charlotte out there with everyone. All right, appreciate the call. Happy New Year.
Happy New Year, but thank you for glad that Natalya could return and renew that rivalry, too.
I could see Natalya in a one-off match. I don't think they're at a point with Natalya where they would put her in a full-fledged, like, credible back-and-forth feud, but the two have chemistry, and some of Charlotte's best matches have been against Natalya. So, I mean, it wouldn't be bad. I'd see that more as a TV program, given how Natalya's been framed lately. But, you know, when somebody goes away for a while, sometimes that's because they want to have you forget about what they were doing so they can wrap them up when they come back. All right, have a great weekend, Ryan. Happy New Year. We got, I believe, an international call here. Go ahead, if you heard a little tone, if it's you, state your name and where you're calling from. Hello. Oh, that caller dropped off. Okay, fair enough. We will move to Javier time to close out the conversation here. Javier from the Miami area joins us. Javier, you've seen WWE in person this week.
Yeah, I was on the I'm your correspondent from yesterday.
Yeah,
I was at the live show yesterday that they had down here, which was it was fun. It was a fun experience. It was also my my friend's first ever, and I never didn't really realize this is his first that was his first ever live experience. So he enjoyed it. He got a weird enjoyment of watching the referees cleaning up after a table spot. You know, because it's like, you know, it's something you don't think about when you watch it on TV, that someone has to clean this up. So, you know, he got to see how the sausage is made, so to speak.
Javier, did he ask why he can't hear the announcers?
No, he did not. He also liked the fact that it, you know, it how the pace of the show and how it felt, since you didn't have to wait for, you know, commercial breaks and stuff like that, you know, which is what he thought it would be like. So, you know, outside of the intermission halfway, there was, you know, a 15-minute intermission or so. By the way, Brandon, hello. What Wade started off hot, so I'm going to get a chance to greet you.
Javier, what I want to know is was any one wrestler more over than the tables?
I'm assuming you're not reading the write-up I sent Wade. I actually have a list of the top 10. Bray Wyatt and Bloodline were 1A and 1B. The reason I give Bray Wyatt a slight advantage over that is that there were kids running down the stairs, you know, to get closer to Bray Wyatt, which says a lot about parenting here in Miami. And which explains something else later. And then the Bloodline was also these were.
Javier, I made an art form out of running from like the upper deck to ringside to get close to wrestlers when I was 10, 11, 12, 13 years old. I had it all mapped out. All three major arenas, four major arenas I went to in the Twin Cities for wrestling events. I knew where to sit and what path to take to get security.
I'm more concerned with the kids really being that much into an obviously that damaged individual.
Oh, right.
Anything else.
Totally. I get that. Yeah. No, I get that.
Yeah. But yeah, so definitely that's why I give them the slight edge on that. Those were like superstar pops. Those were, I mean, you know, the arena was about half, you know, a half full, half empty, depending on whether you're an optimist or a pessimist. But this is the case where like everybody was like leaning forward and really interested in what was going on with this. Those were the two big. Those were like on another level. And then of like the other people who I would say got, you know, star reactions, Braun Strowman was the top one of that, which was fairly surprising. Then Kevin Owens and Sheamus. Miami has not gotten the memo. They scoff at everything you have said about Rousey, because then Ronda Rousey was the next top babyface down here. I was kind of like surprised, because I mean it was the match where they were cheering everything Ronda did and booing everything that Raquel Rodriguez did. The match was the exact, for the most part, except for the final sequence. It was the exact same match, spot for spot, that they did yesterday, the one they had today. But when Raquel would power out of, you know, those when Rousey had her in a hole and she would power out of it, people start booing. And I was like, you know, Miami did not get the message. I was curious to see what the reaction was today, if this was just a Miami situation or if it was like, that they're liking Rousey now all of a sudden, but apparently they got more of a in line reaction to what they were expecting, what we've been saying. Then the next biggest,
cool.
The next biggest spot, the next biggest right after that was the table. That was the next. So Ronda actually beat
it was
the table
further
for that.
Down.
Then
on
it
the
was
list.
Kofi Kingston. Yeah, then it was Kofi Kingston. Well, the first was the table coming to play, then Kofi Kingston, then the table getting broken, and then New Day music playing, rounded out the top 10. So, so yeah, I mean, that was The other thing was I really like, one of the things that stood out to me was Shayna Baszler. At one point, they started a Shayna Sucks chant, and she actually played into it, where she then started torturing Liv Morgan the more they booed her or chanted Shayna Sucks. She did more and more, it was a street fight. So she would do more and more torturous things to Liv Morgan, which was very, very much appreciated. Not to be a Liv Morgan, the way that she interacted with the crowd, let me make sure I don't upset Liv Morgan fans. But it was good. Overall, really a nice show. The only thing was that it was the Maximum Male Models were the ones who wrestled a Hit Row. They were fun, but the problem is it feels like they're taking too much from other people's gimmicks. They said they were gonna do a 5-minute pose. I'm like thinking, Edge and Christian. A lot of stuff they were doing was very reminiscent of Fashion Police. So, a lot of derivative stuff, funny, but if you know those acts, you're like, oh, they're kind of treading the same ground. So I think that's pretty much one other thing that might be interesting for the future. There was a spot during the main event where after a ref bump, Strowman was last one in the ring, and Solo Sikoa got onto the apron. They faced off. Solo Sikoa took off the jacket that he was wearing, and he went into the ring, and they got into a New Japan style back and forth of just punching each other and then trying to knock each other over with tackles. And the crowd really ate that up. The two of them standing across from each other. So I would not be surprised at some point they go to Solo Sikoa Braun Strowman after whatever Braun Strowman does with Gunther is with his program with Gunther is done. So that's something to keep an eye out for.
They have a solo.
Yeah, they have so many matches that they've planted seeds for that they can cash in on later. And, Wade Barrett going, he's got the gravitas of a star who's been around a lot longer than he has. And, Cole jumped in. Oh, yeah, but his family lineage, he brings that with him. Anyone with that lineage does is going to bring that with him. But, yeah, they've got something with him. And, him just sitting there with his arms crossed, expressionless, as the circus of Sammy's insecurities and neuroses are messed with by Roman and the Usos and Paul Heyman is a slow boil or a slow build, for fans to just want to see him express opinions. And in the meantime, WWE is showing him to be a pretty dominant wrestler. Although, I did, by the way, what'd you think of Solo's performance against Sheamus? Javier first and then Brandon after that.
Yeah, it was good. It was pretty much what I expected. I would just recommend because he's definitely pulling from the Umaga playbook, which is cool. But I would also like look heavy into study a lot of Samoa Joe tapes and I'd also study some Taz tapes if you could bring some of the that I think that those wrestlers would very those would be like the ones that would benefit the most. I also mentioned Raquel Rodriguez to my brother that it feels like that she should watch a lot of. Because of her size compared to the rest of the women and build compared to the rest of the women in her division, that it would probably behoove her to watch a lot of Kevin Nash stuff. So,
Javier. So what else about SmackDown? Talking about
the Bray Wyatt thing. I feel more and more vindicated every time as the story continues to develop with the Howdy attacking. Bray, I at this point really do hope that it is Bo Dallas repackaged because I want to hear the line that I'm not an uncle, more of a brother, something along those lines. that line very well delivered better than I did. I think that will get send the chill down the people who are into this. And I've been seeing online a lot more people are like, they're finally coming out of the woodwork, being more accepting of the Bray Wyatt, the more spookiness. Because I've been seeing a lot of articles of like, oh, you know what? I actually like this. My coworkers don't like this, but I like it. So a lot more people being honest about it.
Funny.
So But yeah, I thought it was a nice. I thought this was a very important step in that direction because I do think that and it's probably just because they want to, you know, build a specific cadence. But I think the thing they're overlooking is the whole idea that Bray Wyatt, you know, doesn't want to be violent while the fans want him to be violent and Uncle Howdy wants him to be violent. So, you know, it puts, you know, the fans' interests are more aligned with Uncle Howdy than they are with Bray Wyatt, who's supposed to be babyface. And I think that also leads to some of the unease that some people have with the way the story is going. But if they can, you know, but like you could tell the audience really perked up when he says, hey, you know, when he basically said, not these words, because he didn't really infringe on Bully Ray, that when he said, you know, do you know who I am? You know, you forget how violent I can be. And people really perked up with that, you know, because they're ready to see him, you know, be that kind of more, you know, vicious kind of character. So, you know, hopefully that, you know, and I think that they really should plan matches around that and not do some of the kind of matches that he was having, because if you build around him being more vicious, you know, and not really, doesn't necessarily need to be high work rate, but you have to, it particularly with that character, the story you tell in the ring is way more important than what the actual moves are, and a lot of work needs to go into being able to tell that story.
What are we getting at the Rumble? Is it a blacklight match? Is that it? Is this like
it's a Mountain Dew blackout or something like
yeah,
that?
Yeah, blackout. Match.
Yeah,
they already.
I get it.
They had announced it prior to.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You have this
really like interesting, spooky, you know, character, and again, props to LA Knight for, you know, the way he's portraying this, that you know, Seth Rollins should look upon what LA Knight has been doing in the way that, you know, and I'm not totally blaming that. He might have been directed to act that way, but you know, this is how you actually survive with your character intact, a situation like this. So very good on LA Knight. But when you then now are saying, you know, this match is being brought to you by Mountain Dew, I'm like, seriously? I mean, I know there's a lot of money in cross advertising like that, but like, do we really need to do it for this match? You know, and it's not like that pitch black Mountain Dew flavor is available down here in Miami, because we don't get any of the good flavors. So that's doubly upsetting to me. But
this,
yeah,
this power play in the NHL is brought to you by by Surge. Yeah, is Surge still around? I don't know.
You know, I think it is in certain locations. Because I think I saw it once. I'm like, wow, this still exists. I really thought, you know, so good moving forward on where they're going. The two other things I've noticed, I don't think I've brought up, and I haven't heard, is the you know, this whole story with following the White Rabbit, and note that hat that Uncle Howdy wears, the characters, you know, obviously being the Mad Hatter, so. That's one thing to keep in mind. And the other thing is that the, you know, the whole moth thing, you know, I always felt that it's less Bray Wyatt symbol and more what represents this character. And that's what Alexa Bliss has been seeing. And when that symbol appears, what he says is revel in who you are. So that adds more to the whole what's going on with Bliss, you know, who she really is, you know, bring out the darkness within her kind of thing, which, you know, speaks to me that she's more likely to be allied with Uncle Howdy than Bray Wyatt when things finally go down.
Do you sound confident that there's going to be a lot of things that converge and make sense when this all comes together?
Yeah. Yeah, because I mean the Fiend stuff, you know, that's what gives me confidence. The Fiend stuff, there was some of the stuff might have been a happy accident that happened, and like what when it clicked to me was there was a moment during the Fiend stuff where when he was putting the pictures of all the people that he attacked Mick Foley, which is when he stole the mandible claw. He attacked Kane. He attacked these people. And when I saw that, it was I remember because what got me back into wrestling were the What Culture, What Culture's like videos, and they kept doing like, you know, top tens how they screwed Bray Wyatt in storylines, and I recognized that these were all people that he was feuding with, which were feuds that he should have won, you know, him, well, not just him, but him and the Wyatt family and the faction. That would have, you know, elevated the faction to a higher level, and I started noticing that. And I don't know if it was originally a happy accident, but then you could see that they were actually plotting it. And the only, you know, they did explain, he explained through social media, like in character, that the reason he went after Mick Foley, even though they never actually feuded, was because they were setting up a feud during a social media, because Bray Wyatt and Mick Foley were trying to, you know, create a program, but they were not going to clear Mick Foley, so that program never happened. But then they, you know, they kind of, that's kind of how they tied that final chapter of what they were doing. And then because he also attacked Kurt Angle, and the Kurt Angle was, you know, you made me believe, you made me hope. So there were reasons, you know, even though he was never really involved with him, he explained why he took him out. And if you notice, all the people that he wrestled as the Fiend were also people that he had previously been in matches with, and the only match that he had that was as Bray Wyatt and not the Fiend was The Miz, when he wrestled The Miz. So all that stuff made me think that this, you know, they know what they're doing. They have a story they want to tell. At that time, Vince McMahon would then get involved and then give him the title, and then, you know, things went off the rails in a different direction. All that made sense for that chapter, what I call the first act of the Fiend, which was, you know, which basically started from the beginning and ended with the Firefly Funhouse match with John Cena. That was act one. That kind of finished it. Act two went off the rail, you know, started well off too, because it was with the whole Braun Strowman, Alexa Bliss got involved. Then that went completely off the rails. You know, obviously they felt that character fit better for Alexa Bliss, and then Vince McMahon's mentality of only one spotlight for one person, doesn't want these two people sharing the spotlight, likes Bliss better, you know, we're not going to deal with the Fiend, we like, you know, the Bliss character better, you know, for whatever reason, and then, you know, things just basically went awry for that end. But I do have confidence that they have an idea, and I do have even more confidence that Triple H will help see them through. So that's why I think they, and from what we've heard, they're planning longer period storylines. So I think this storyline is going to have long legs for a long period of time. Very likely, a rogues gallery. There will be a rogues gallery that he's going to have to deal with. And they've also mentioned that I've read online that they also are thinking about putting in more factions on SmackDown, so that the Bloodline have more people to wrestle with as a faction. And then, you know, so eventually you could actually have, you know, that faction, that group that you create, also be involved with the Bloodline at some point in the future, and, you know, an Imperium that we already have, and the Brawling Brutes and all that stuff. So I do like the direction things are going, so, yeah.
Yeah. Hang on. I want to, while you're here, Javier, unless you got to go, I want to read a couple emails on Charlotte to kind of lead to a little conversation on that. Joe from New York goes, hey guys, Charlotte winning the title tonight shows why Charlotte has never won over many longtime hardcore wrestling fans. Too many times Charlotte wins like a chicken or comes in the back door. This was bad. Rousey got beat just like Kofi did when Lesnar beat him on the first ever SmackDown on Fox. I don't care if she just had a match. She lost to Charlotte in less than 2 minutes. Rousey should never be booked like that. My point is Rousey has always been underbooked. She should have been booked like Brock from day one of her career. You should be able to count on two hands how many times Rousey should have lost in her career. If she was booked strong from day one, she might have been a real ratings draw. Instead, WWE has 60-40 booked Rousey her whole career, and she's had no real impact on ratings as a result. Back to Charlotte, first of all, this booking spell to Vince McMahon. Second, WWE really just gave Charlotte the title after taking 8 months off. She got married, took time off, doesn't have to earn her title match. She basically walked into the ring like she was a Money in the Bank winner, cashing in and beating a champion who already had a match. Only problem is she wasn't a Money in the Bank winner. She just wins the belt without earning anything. Although storyline-wise, I will add, that was that the heat. The blame is on Rousey for accepting the challenge. Shayna Baszler was in her face telling her not to do it. Breyer from Council Grove, Kansas said, I had a question about Charlotte Flair. To me, Charlotte has never really appealed to me as a wrestler to cheer for. I never cared much for her character, and her winning a lot in the past was a turnoff to me. It got old quickly, and I thought she was somewhat stale. What do you think WWE can do this time to help change this thought moving forward? Thanks and Happy New Year. And finally, Hector from Chicago said, I was watching SmackDown late. I love how the Bloodline faces all went serious or worried when Sammy was talking about how the fans chanted his name, but then laughed when Roman said it was okay. Also, I noticed Solo, I don't believe, ever took his eyes off Sammy, nor did he smile or laugh like the others. I like that the Bray story is starting to move along more. And finally, Charlotte is back. Thank God. Rousey has only gotten worse on the mic. She should be nowhere near Becky in the back-and-forth promos. Loving all the holiday videos from the Mysterio family. So a few things more from Hector than just Charlotte, but some Charlotte opinions there. Javier, you can respond to any of that or just kind of give your thoughts on it too, but I wanted to get a few emails in on Charlotte.
Yeah, I was watching. I'm like, oh, this makes total sense because it sets up Rousey to win the Rumble and then challenge Becky Lynch. And then, like, while on this call, and this was my thoughts as the, you know, after I saw the match, and it wasn't until this call, I'm like, wait a minute, Becky Lynch is not the champion. So I had a chance to recalibrate as to what the decision is. Because, you know, the way that she lost, I was like, okay, well, this is just an easy way to for her to pivot over to do something with Becky. I mean, unless what they're planning to do is have a Becky-Rousey match with no title on the line and then have the other two titles. So, you know, you get, you know, so you don't need to sweeten up. You don't need to sweeten anymore, with the idea being that you don't need to sweeten up the feud between Rousey and Becky that we kind of wanted to see, although I'm not sure how much appetite there is at this point for it. Mm-hmm. But, yeah, it's weird. I mean, the only other thing I think is that maybe that they're going to pivot for a while with and the two of them, Baszler and Rousey team up, and then maybe at some point get some sort of, we can't get the full four horsewomen versus four horsewomen, but get at least, you know, some of that with maybe, you know, some sort of combination of women of those two groups.
Yeah, I Javier, I'm with you on the pivoting there. I think that there may have been a change even just recently. I think something was reported on Twitter today that already seems to be, you know, out because Ronda lost the title. But I just think that Ronda is such a cold character right now that I don't know that Becky Lynch versus Ronda Rousey at WrestleMania has the gravitas that it did even just 6 months ago. I mean, I think we all kind of thought that was the direction and that was kind of the hope and what people wanted to see. But Rousey's been so cold since that I really wonder if they're not pivoting to something different. And I do think that maybe the best use of Rousey at this point for WrestleMania would be in a tag title match with Shayna Baszler. I just think, like, if you are going to have two one-on-one women's title matches at WrestleMania, you've got four women who feel like a bigger deal than Rousey right now. You've got Charlotte Flair, Rhea Ripley, Bianca Belair, and Becky Lynch. So some combination of those four paired off in two one-on-one matches feels to me like a bigger deal than anything they can do with Rousey right now.
Javier?
Yeah, and as far as Charlotte goes, I'm kind of with the naysayers when it comes to her. Things tend not to work out, and let's say I was not super excited with her, you know, just coming in and winning the title because, and I don't think she's going to be a babyface because, I mean, unless my eyes were lying to me and I didn't really, and it wasn't like full, you know, contact, it kind of seemed like she grabbed the tights. Did you guys notice that?
She did.
Okay. So, you know, just that thing, I kind of think that, yeah, they're going to get the cheers now and then going to go full heel mode when she gets her first promo next week.
Very good. Javier, anything else you want to bring up from the show tonight?
I think that's pretty much it. I mean, I do like the fact that they are, much to probably the top dollar chagrin, owning what happened last week and not just, you know, and then, you know, making something out of a bad situation.
Yeah.
I, I did like how the jokes kept getting worse as each baby face, you know, and they kept getting worse and worse. And Ricochet just like basically didn't joke at all. He said, "Hey, you're dumb. And I'm, you know, which again fits his character, you know. It's just that, you know, it doesn't fit the fact that they're baby faces, but in a way it was kind of a interesting segment, you know, that they left the least charismatic, you know, the least, you know, on the mic charismatic character at all to get the final punchline. And then that's what set Top Dollar off. So I kind of do feel for Top Dollar in that case.
Very good. All right, cool. Javier, Happy New Year.
Happy New Year, guys. Stay safe. And don't drink too much.
Yeah. Good advice. Not always adhered to by people, but good advice. Stay safe, people. Just think of how you're going to feel Sunday, and let that influence your judgment on Saturday night, depending on how your hangovers are and that kind of thing. And you know, stick to one kind of liquor. That's a good tip. I look forward to reading your house show report. We'll put it up on pwtorch.com, too. I appreciate you writing that up. Anyone, if you've had a house show, send us a report, too. We love to run those on the website. Cool, Javier.
I guess. Have a good night.
Yeah, absolutely. Thank you. Good conversation. By the way, Scott emailed. He was our one of our correspondents on site tonight. He goes, "One thing I forgot to mention is a couple of fans next to me saw Ric Flair at a hotel across from the arena before the show started, and we started speculating that maybe he or Charlotte would make an appearance. Yet I was still shocked to see her show up." So little on-site tidbit there. Brendan, anything else you want to bring up before we sign off here?
Yeah, two quick things. We didn't really touch on the Gunther segment, but I thought that was a really strong showing for Imperium. Gunther has been doing some really incredible work, and at first I was kind of like, because they had just come off of a promo and a commercial when Gunther was getting into the ring, and they threw almost immediately to a video package showing, you know, his conquest as Intercontinental Champion. And at first I was like, man, another promo, but it actually served to highlight what he's done really, really well. And I thought it was super effective. I thought it put him and the title over in a really big way. And then I'm not the biggest fan of Braun Strowman by any means, but I thought he was really effective too in coming out. You know, that his promo delivery is always a little bit goofy. I mean, the really grovelly monster line is always, you know, it's
you
a little
beat men. How about a monster?
It's always it's just a little bit cringy. But like, I thought that the stuff he did afterwards was good enough to redeem it. I think that Gunther will very likely get a good match out of Strowman, which isn't something that you can always look to. So I thought that was a strong positive. And then the last thing was just I thought it was really classy on the part of WWE and Michael Cole in particular for him to mention Don West. That is more than likely not something we would have seen under Vince McMahon. And
no way.
I just think it goes to show how much the appearance of a company can change with something so little. It makes them feel like they are part of the world around them instead of existing in their own universe for virtually no reason other than just stubbornness. So it was good. And Cole, you know, throwing the little impact in there. I mean, it was just, it was classy. It was quick. It was very well done. And it was, you know, a sign of the times of a Vince McMahon free WWE.
Absolutely. Yes. I thought that was classy, and you're right. I don't think we would have seen it under Vince McMahon. You know, people loved Don West, and were sad to hear the news that he died and lost his battle with cancer. Todd Martin and I talk about him on an episode of The Fix that we recorded earlier, and actually it ran into past the start point of SmackDown. So I had to speed through all the commercials, get the report in, and watch the show tonight. but we'll be getting that posted either tonight or Saturday. So VIP members can look forward to our discussion on Don West and his impact on wrestling. I still remember talking to TNA founder, co-founder, promoter Jerry Jarrett. He's like, Wade, got this guy. I think he's going to be really big personality on our shows. He's a pitch man from the area, Don West, and I didn't know who he was. And but yeah, it was really sad to hear. I mean, 59. It's just, yeah, of course, it's too young. But yeah, nice of WWE to do that. And I agree. It makes them feel like they're a bigger part of the community when they do that. Yeah, go ahead, Javier.
Yeah, I did want to mark his passing because I was a huge fan, huge fan of TNA, and it's heartening because most of my time on Twitter is mostly wrestling stuff, and there are obviously a lot of people pass. There's an enhanced amount of well wishes coming from a lot of wrestlers.
Yeah.
Because a lot of the wrestlers, like, for example, like Will Ospreay, they are, they're obviously inspired by people like AJ Styles and what was the Exodus. A lot of wrestlers were inspired by those kind of wrestlers. And of course, the voice during all that was Don West. And, he brought so much energy to the show. It was definitely something special that he did. So very sad about that.
All right. Thanks again, Javier. Thanks, Brandon. Always fun chatting SmackDown with you, or Raw, or Impact, or Dynamite. We haven't done Impact.
Dynamite, yeah. Definitely. Certainly glad to be here. One last thing I will recommend, because it is wrestling after all. Go out of your way to watch Glass Onion on Netflix if for nothing else than just for Batista. He is excellent in it, as he is in most of his roles. It's crazy to think that that guy could have quite the range that he does. But man, is the role that he plays a lot of fun. And the movie is great anyway, but man, Batista is a lot of fun.
There's some weekend aside. Do that instead of just getting like S-faced for New Year's. just settle in with a couple of good friends and watch a good movie. All right, Brandon, thanks so much. Happy New Year.
Yeah, you too.
All right, take care, everybody.